You're listening to The Radiator, 105.9 FM, WOMMLP, Burlington, Vermont. I'm Shayla Shapiro, and this is Write the Book, the show for writers and curious readers. Write the Book features interviews with authors, poets, illustrators, agents, and editors. It is Monday, June 13th, 2011, and today on Write the Book, you will hear an interview with Marilyn Grayman, New York psychotherapist and co-principal of LifeWorks, an organization committed to supporting people in having lives that are healthy, fulfilled, and satisfied. Marilyn Grayman says that she learned most of what she knows about human beings during her 12 years as a kindergarten teacher in Jamaica, Queens, New York. She's a graduate of Queens College and holds a master's degree in early childhood education from City University of New York, a psychotherapist since 1978 with a thriving practice in Greenwich Village. She has developed most of the LifeWorks curriculum of courses for men and women. Marilyn has appeared on television, gives lectures around the tri-state area, and has taught regularly in Dallas, San Francisco, and Mexico. With a fourth book in progress, she has a long-range intention to work in early childhood education again. Marilyn teaches ongoing groups, monthly seminars, and weekend workshops at LifeWorks offices in Manhattan. She leads the training of the LifeWorks guiding staff to accommodate the expansion of the organization's business consulting services. A resident of Fire Island's Fair Harbor and Lower Fifth Avenue, she travels extensively, studying what it means to be a human being. Together with her business partner, Maureen Walsh, Marilyn Grayman has written three books based on the LifeWorks programs: The Female Power Within, There Is No Prince, and Other Truths Your Mother Never Told You, and How to Be Cherished. When we spoke last week, I started out by asking Marilyn to talk a little bit about LifeWorks and to explain a little about what they do.
LifeWorks is an organization that is to support women in having the lives they want to have. And since we're located in New York, we get a lot of professional women, women who are professionals, who stay home with their children for a period of time. And our expertise is relationship, and therefore two of our books are about relationship. And then the third book is about one's relationship with oneself, which, of course, is very central to having anything in life feel good and anything in life work well. So we have workshops, we have seminars. We have four- and five-day retreats. We have some ongoing groups, and we've been in existence since 1984. And mostly, we are known by word of mouth, so we have had some great successes since so many women tell so many women about it that we've been able to offer our work for all of this time.
Yeah. Now, is the book that's about... the book that's not about relationships, but that's more about, you know, feeling good within oneself, is Feed the Female Power?
Yes, it's The Female Power Within. And it is about it's about your relationship with yourself and being able to offer the world what it is that you do best and how to find out what that is and then how to be able to feel good enough about yourself to put that into the world, which can include loving your family. It's not necessarily oriented to career. So we talk a lot about being authentic and having a life that fits, and like when you wake up in the morning, you have a sense of fact that what you do in your day has something to do with you rather than sort of feeling foreign to you but doing it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So we really want to help women feel that they're connected to their life and that it's not just filled with chores, but that there's something delightful, at least part of your day. And, of course, no, we don't say what that ought to be, but we help women find out what that is. And maybe the biggest piece is that people, when life doesn't work easily, think that there must be something wrong with them. That's sort of the thing we say to ourselves. You know, why isn't it working? What's wrong with me? That's a saying that even if you don't say it out loud, you probably say it to yourself.
Right.
And our premise is that there's nothing wrong with you. There is absolutely nothing wrong with you, but there are things in the way. And all of our workshops and our books are about finding out what's in the way and then helping women take that away so that there's a clear path to contentment and satisfaction and fulfillment.
Okay. And you have, LifeWorks is your work and also the work of your business partner, Maureen Walsh.
Maureen and I are business partners, yes.
Yeah.
And she tends to be more toward the business aspect, but she also runs some of our workshops and is the co-author of the three books.
Okay. Now, how did you and she decide to write books in addition to the work you do, you know, face-to-face with women?
Yeah, well, actually, each book is a workshop in book form. And so we've been doing the workshops for a very, very long time. And somebody or a number of somebodies said, why don't you put this in a book, which, of course, is a brilliant idea, because you either had to live in New York, Dallas, or San Francisco to sort of find us.
Yeah.
And we felt as if, you know, it was true that we could reach a great many more people by putting it in book form. So it was an undertaking that Maureen always dreamed of. She is more into the writing part of things and putting things down on paper. And so it was she was delighted with the idea, and we really took it to heart and produced one book right after the other.
Now, you established LifeWorks Publishing in order to bring these books out. Does that company publish other books as well, or only those of LifeWorks?
We only published our own, and our books don't look like self-published books because they're very sophisticated looking, I must say.
Yeah.
without ego, I hope. We did have a contract at some point with a publisher, and our publisher no longer worked with the company, and when you lose your publisher, you lose footing in the publishing company. And so we were very disappointed and felt quite heartbroken. So we decided better to do it on our own. And also in publishing these days, if you're not well known, they don't support the marketing, and we decided if we were going to pay for the marketing anyway and find our own way to have people know about our books, we might as well have published them ourselves, that too is quite the undertaking.
Now, I should mention there are three books. The first one is There Is No Prince. The second is The Female Power Within, which you mentioned before.
Yes.
And then the most recent book is How to Be Cherished, and that's the one I was thinking we would focus on today.
Certainly. Of course.
And throughout all of these books, though, you do address the reader directly as you, and I wonder if you can talk about deciding to do that.
Well, we feel as if we would like this almost like a workbook, although it's not exactly a workbook. We do suggest people think about things and write things down. At the end of the No Prince book, there are questions for each chapter.
Right.
At the end of the chapters, and we felt, first of all, it's all in female, so the pronouns are female, which most books don't read that way, and it was delightful to write that way, and there are men who have read our books, but in general, these kinds of self-help books are things that women take to heart. So we decided to say you so that it was really clearly a strong connection to what it was that the reader was reading and that she could relate directly to what we were saying, because we worked with enough women to know that although we don't know everybody, there were some very universal things that we were touching. And by being that direct, a woman could really feel as if she felt that we knew her.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, you just mentioned this, but early in How to Be Cherished, you write, this book is not for your man. So I'm wondering if you can talk about this. Would men benefit from reading the books, or do you feel that they just are written for women, and that's what the point you wanted to make?
We just feel as if let me put it this way. In relationship, women really are in charge of relationship, as much as we don't think so, and we may not like it. And so we were having women understand what it was that they needed to do in order for a relationship to work. So you really have to read the book to understand what we mean by that. But so men sort of follow women around in relationship, let's say at least on the emotional level, because if you leave a relationship to a man, he doesn't know what he's doing, and it will fall apart. You know, and although we women don't necessarily know everything about what to do, that's why we wrote the book, but we do know much more. We have that kind of sensitivity. I think women could relate to the probability that if you're in a marriage or committed relationship, you're the one that brings the family together. The woman's the one that makes sure the man is in contact with his family. The woman is the one that decides you know, what gifts to buy for people, et cetera. Not that men have no feedback, but she's remembering the birthdays. She's reminding him to do that. And we sort of run the show that way.
Right.
So
right.
Therefore, although there are many parts of that book that men could benefit from, we were really speaking to her.
Right.
And so therefore we wrote it that way. And it's cozier also if you're reading it and you know this is for you.
Yeah. So I had a question. As I was reading this, I wondered about lesbian couples and if these books would speak to both partners in that sort of relationship.
I would say that almost everything would apply to gay men, gay women, straight men, straight women. Mm-hmm. But it would apply to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
We do accent a little bit about how to understand men. So for the women who are in relationship with women, they may not need that or relate to it. They could skip those chapters.
Mm-hmm.
The men who read it might find out something about themselves and
mm-hmm.
the men that they're with. But, you know, in writing a book, you have to really decide on an audience. And so we decided on that audience, but we do know that, at least for sure, that there are a number of gay people who have felt great value from the book.
Now, there are a lot of examples and stories in the books, and I'm wondering if most of the stories are true based on experiences you've heard through your work with your clients.
They're absolutely true stories.
Yeah.
Names have changed. A number of the stories are about me. A number of the stories about Maureen. We put other names to it. Certainly, they're about the clients that we see, and we had to disguise that for privacy purposes. Yes, they're absolutely true stories. We didn't make anything up. And that is, we work in that kind of concrete way, that we really take a look at what someone is dealing with and find the solutions that would fit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so no, they're all true stories.
How difficult did you find it to structure the books?
It was quite the process because we did have someone who's assisted us, Hillary Wells. And what Hillary did was observe me giving the workshops, and she and we had a transcription of the workshops, and she took the workshops, each one as she was writing each book. And we gave her an outline of what it is that we wanted the book to be like, and she used the material to fill in.
Okay.
So I have to say that when she first gave us the first chapters, it sounded nothing like what we meant. And so in each book. So by the second book, we understood that we were really nervous, the first book. But by the second book, we understood that it was just part of the process, that it was a matter of talking it over, refining it, putting in the corrections, because Maureen and I created sort of what we call the technology in the book, and she didn't create it, so she couldn't have mastered it quite so well. So there were, of course, a lot of corrections. But I felt that she did a phenomenal job, ultimately, of finding our voice,
uh-huh.
what we do sound like in our workshop.
Now, that's interesting. I've got a question about this later, but
yeah.
This is a collaboration not just between you and your business partner, but of a third person. So that's really an interesting collaboration.
Yes, it was. It was, and she actually got engaged because our No Prince book was for women. Our first book actually was Relationship with Yourself. Female power.
Okay.
So she got enriched by that, and then she read the No Prince. She wrote the No Prince book with us, and she got engaged.
Yeah, I suppose writing these books would really ensure that you were going to have a great
relationship.
Oh yes,
and then the parts that she was confused about were her trouble spots about relationships. So by straightening the book out, we straightened her out. It was wonderful. It was wonderful for everybody.
Poor Hillary. Hillary doesn't get to be an anonymous story because she's
no.
the author.
Yes, but a success story.
Yay.
Which is very nice. Yes.
Well, in asking about the structure, one of the reasons I asked was that you suggest in the books that readers keep a notebook of thoughts and reactions to the work. And at the end of the chapters in How to Be Cherished, you include prompts that help readers get started on their thoughts, you know, writing down in their notebooks on each new subject. So I liked that idea. I wondered if was that something that you came up with? Was that Hillary's idea?
No, we came up with that because we did really want it to be a workbook.
And that's part of the workshop, too?
That it, The workshop has a lot of workbook information. It isn't a bunch of women sitting together and trying to for Maureen or for me to solve each person's problem like a group therapy session. The workshops have a beginning, a middle, and an end, and we really work through all kinds of material to bring a woman by the end of the weekend out to the other side so that she, in the case of How to Be Cherished, feels much more confident. First of all, falling back in love with her husband, because very often that's something that's required in order to be cherished. You have to love him in order to elicit his love for you. And then a lot of ways to smooth what is difficult. And some of it is even just what to expect in relationship. A lot of people have, unfortunately, some only romantic ideas of what a relationship should feel like and be like. And so so the workshop has a beginning, middle, and end and brings women through. And therefore, we did that in the book as well. Mm-hmm. You can certainly read the book and not do that and get value from it, but we really felt as if that's what we had to offer, and that was something, not a series of lectures, you know, but actually working with people.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned the sort of atmosphere at the workshops and women together working with you and each other and themselves. And actually, that reminded me that at one point in How to Be Cherished, you encourage women to confide in their female friends, but you specify that they should try to choose happy friends and people who don't, you know, aren't in the habit of complaining about men and about their own relationships. And I thought that was an interesting point. You know, if your best friend isn't happy, maybe that's not the right person to confide in.
And certainly her advice will be from a person who isn't successful. So you would want advice that you're really hoping to get from somebody who, if they didn't deal with that in particular, they still have come out on the other side in a good way. And we unfortunately take advice from people who really don't know what they're talking about just because we can't figure out what to do. And I also, from my experience of working with people, not to be talking to too many people, because if you have an irritation and you keep on talking about it, you get more irritated rather than less irritated. And so to solve something, you have to be less irritated because you can't find a creative solution while you're upset. Never really happens.
Yeah. Not to mention the fact that your husband or spouse, man, whatever, will never be accepted by your circle of friends if everybody knows all the problems you've gone through.
That's right. And and then you also, when you complain about your man, your good friends get mad at him, you know.
Right.
And you sort of want that. And then when you want them to support you to stay, let's say, they'll say that you want to stay with him, you know,
right,
because you've heard all the stories. And so it's complicated. And, you know, there's a difference between a psychotherapist, which I am, trained to lean back and ask the right questions, but not to have opinions. But friends always have opinions, and the opinions they have are based on their own experience. What else would there be? But, you know, so if you're having trouble, what you're hearing is that woman's opinion based on her experience, which may not be anything that would help you.
Yeah, yeah.
So you have to be careful.
I'm wondering if the men in the lives of the women you work with ever take issue with any of your advice or assessments.
They love us.
Oh, good.
They love us. In fact, you'll hear a woman will report that they'll say, when are you seeing Marilyn again? or they would say, what would Marilyn say now? And they feel very understood by us. And they actually, as I'm suggesting, push their women to make sure that they contact us on a regular basis, because they see the difference of how they are treated when a woman comes and explores in our presence. Now, and when I was giving talks at bookstores around the city and also around the country, men would sort of line the edges, and I would look around, and they'd be nodding their heads when I would talk about them, and they were, like, in a great agreement that I really understood them and helped women understand them, because there are great differences between men and women, and if you understand a man, you'll be less offended. more, and you'll be able to love him more, feel the love for him more often.
Yeah. Well, actually, I was wondering as I read How to Be Cherished about your thoughts on feminism and the ways in which feminism has sort of historically expressed itself in reaction to men. And I'm thinking about the roots mm-hmm. of feminism. I think at the beginning there was a lot of anger, you know, possibly rightly so, based upon the way our society was treating women. But so what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I feel as if feminism was in the 50s, 60s, 70s, even 80s, it was a phenomenal experience. It was so powerful and so necessary. And yet, and somehow when you're trying to get out of something that doesn't work, you have to get mad at somebody and blame them. And as you said, perhaps rightfully so. But after a while, it doesn't work anymore. That's not where you're going to get your power from. You're going to get your power from understanding yourself and knowing yourself and seeing what else stops you, and fighting doesn't really produce anything authentic. It just produces a reaction. So there's a point at which I feel as if women need to stop being angry and not blame and start really investigating what's really true for them and right for them and bring themselves through the system. Now, certainly corporations are designed by men. It's a military structure, you know, someone on the top and then two people under him and then four people under them, et cetera. And it's not a structure that women tend to respond to. We do things in circles, mm-hmm. and men do things in hierarchies. So we don't fit very well. And so in a place like that, there's still some issues that women have, some old boys club kind of thing, et cetera. But to really figure out who you are in the world and where your power is and where your strength is, it's time to stop fighting and work on your anger issues and get into your own knowledge of yourself. And that's where the Female Power Within book comes in, because mm-hmm. that's what we're working on doing. And so sometimes people think we're anti-feminist. I had a flag in each hand during feminism, and it was a very, very important thing for me. But after a while, it was a kind of thing I hid behind rather than really come into myself in a more private way. And that worked perfectly. And there is such a thing as female power, which is very different than male power. Male power has a great deal of force in it, and it's a good thing. And we, all people, have male power. But all people also have this female power. And the female power is... The reason why it's hard to experience its power is that it's quite invisible, and that when it's not there, you're aware of it. So let's say tenderness is very female. And if you're in a situation where there is no tenderness, you start seeing how powerful tenderness is. But when tenderness is there, it just goes very smoothly. And yet tenderness is a kind of power. And when you're with a man who is tender, you feel like that you're being empowered. Mm-hmm. But we shy away from seeing ourselves as powerful in being female. So it's a longer discussion, of course, to really tease this out.
Right. But that's interesting. That really answers what I was thinking about as I read the book, because I felt like Well, I know you personally outside of this conversation, and I just felt like, you know, I know she's probably a feminist, or yes. or certainly in favor of equal rights and this and that, and yet very comfortably saying women are this way, men are this way, and I just wondered how that reconciles.
Yeah, you know, if we're different, we are, and it's all biochemical. It's not anything political or psychological. There's a great difference between us biochemically, and that shows up. And our brains are different. Men's brains and women's brains are very different, and actually they say that gay men's brains look more like women's brains, which is an interesting thing, right? So it isn't even like men don't want to be like us. They don't have it in their brains to be like us, and we like them.
Yeah. All right. Well, here's another question about a point that you make in the book. There's a concept that you call time traveling in the book. And I thought that was really interesting. And my understanding of it is that sometimes a little thing might set us off in our relationships, and it's really attached to something that happened a long time ago when you perhaps weren't even with your man that you're now with. And that's time traveling. So maybe you could talk a little bit about that.
Yes, and where you travel to usually is childhood. As a psychotherapist, I would have to bring in that childhood, that a great deal of our emotional issues come from our childhood issues. And so when you're very upset, and I actually say if you're upset for more than 3 minutes, you have time traveled. Because certainly you could be very annoyed at something that somebody does. But if it disappears in a few minutes, then it's just about that person in that moment, and then it's disappeared. But if you are upset and it's plaguing you for hours and sometimes for days and you can't quite, you know, put it to rest, you are in your history. You have traveled back through the decades. And that instead of being opposite your husband, you might be opposite your father. You might be opposite your mother. You might be opposite the girls who teased you and bullied you in the schoolyard. You might be opposite a brother. And when you start seeing that this upset is really historical, and I think the title of the chapter is "If you're hysterical, it's historical."
Yes.
If you find out that it's historical, it eases the tension between you and your husband, because you start seeing that he did do that, but the enormity of your response really has very little to do with him. Had you had different parenting, you might not be this upset this long.
And I should say that the sorts of problems we're talking about aren't like infidelity or something.
Oh, No.
This is little things.
And larger things, but not so detrimental to a marriage, yes.
Okay.
But larger things, you know, like someone who's always late, or that could go on for months and months, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, I enjoyed the suggestion in the book that women create a care and feeding manual for their partners to help them understand what she needs and how to best help her through emotional times. I don't know that I have a question here. I just loved that, though.
Yeah, well, plants come with care and feeding manuals, you know, how to water it, how much sun to give it. And we don't really know what the other one needs. We keep giving what we would need.
Right.
And he keeps giving what he would need. So let's say illness. Some people like to be left alone. So if a man leaves you alone in illness, there's possibly a chance that he likes to be left alone. So he's giving you what he wants and doesn't know that that's not what you want.
Right.
You want something else. Or birthday celebrations. Also, some people like lots of attention. Some people don't want any. And so we tend to give what we want.
My favorite one was, when I'm stressed about work, I need to complain, but I'm not necessarily looking for solutions.
Yes.
I love that one because, and, you know, this is a generalization, but I think there are some of those that apply. But I do think men look to fix things sometimes.
They do. They want to be your hero. That's really a big thing for men. They want to be a hero, and they will look for a solution. And that's what they do in their own for themselves. They look for a solution. They don't go, oh, poor Jason. You know, they just say, what's the solution? So they do the same thing with us, and we want the, that must feel bad. And I find that men, they may forget that that's what you want, and you might have to remind them, but I feel like they're very relieved to find out what it is that would work, because they don't want the upset either, and
right.
They don't really want to hurt us. They're just doing what they know to do. And we, when we put in the corrections, we're mad at them rather than putting in the corrections understanding that they don't understand and that actually they want the information. And if we give it in a tone of voice that isn't angry, they'll hear it. If we give it in a tone of voice that's angry, they'll only hear the criticism and they'll have to defend themselves.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, another really interesting point to me, and this is a very big subject, and I'm sure we won't be able to talk about it at length, but I did find it very interesting to read about the way we live in reaction to our parents' marriages. We either seek out relationships that are like theirs or seek out the opposite. And I just wonder if you can talk about this a little bit.
Yeah, well, when you're little, life goes by really fast. And so each child sort of feels relieved that they have figured out the world. And how they figure out the world is they look at their mother and their father as the role models. That's why they say we do what they do, not what they tell us to do, that we really model after them. So it's just sometimes we're just relieved that we have a solution when we're little, and then we grow up thinking, well, that's how marriage is. Isn't that how marriage is? Because you only lived inside of one marriage, possibly two if your parents have split up, and those are that's the reality of the world. And so anything else is new, and although lots of people say they want new things, we're uncomfortable with something new, or there's too much unknown. So the tendency is to be attracted to something that's familiar. And if you think of the word familiar, it's really familiar. We're attracted to things that are familiar.
Wow. Yeah.
Familiar. And then when we're looking for a solution in a marriage, our automatic response would be what one of our parents did, because we don't really know what to do. We don't know what to do. So we do what's familiar, and therefore we model after them. And we're also attracted to people who remind us of our childhood because it's comfortable.
So when we go the opposite way, why is that?
It's just rebellion. But, you know, opposite is not necessarily best. It's just opposite. And it's a kind of rebellion. And I think every child who was one day a teenager has some rebellion in there. You know, a father who is overbearing and critical. So then you're with a man who is very...
passive.
Yes. And then you're mad at him that he's passive. But you picked him because you made sure you didn't have your father.
So actually, picking the opposite isn't necessarily thinking outside the box.
Perfect. You said it exactly right. It's still a reaction. And what we work with women is to take them beyond a reaction into a well-thought action.
Yeah, yeah.
And decision, yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about writing and about your work on the books. I know that you weren't the one who literally, like, wrote every single word in the books, but when the books are being written, what's your involvement?
An outline and the content given verbally, which I speak a great deal better than I write. And then Maureen and I put that together and then included Hillary in it. Then she took our workshops. Then we would sit down and go over the presentation, whether or not the stories work. We did most of our writing in Santa Fe, where Maureen had a house and Hillary lived.
Uh-huh.
And so we would give Hillary the work, and then we would come visit and work for maybe 5 to 10 days on redoing what needed to be redone. And then a few weeks later, I'd fly back. And there was a lot of conversation, a lot of trial and error.
Mm-hmm.
We sat with the confidence that it could be done, which helps a lot. You know, the attitude toward it will be done. You know, we stayed really good friends. Nobody got mad. We worked on not getting at taking our frustrations out on each other, which is easy to do, but it's very much about the Cherish book, not to take your frustrations out on each other.
Okay, and are you working on any other books right now?
Only in my mind. I have a book that I'd like to call The Handbook to Being Human, What to Expect and How to Cope.
Oh.
That's
Is that based on a workshop, or are you thinking of the workshop?
No, just watching people and seeing how we're sort of upset with ourselves when, in fact, we're just plain being human.
Yeah.
And we have to know how to deal with that and what to expect. At the moment, we don't have plans to do another book, no.
Okay. You mentioned earlier your decision to publish on your own, partially because of the fact that you were going to put so much energy into marketing the books anyway. How do you go about marketing the books? What do you do?
We actually hired a marketing person who knew the self-help arena, and I traveled around the country talking in many, many, many bookstores and giving some talks in places that would attract women who were interested in this subject. I wrote for when the books came out in the middle of the 2000s, there weren't as many blogs or websites, but I did write for a few websites and got interviewed and had articles. And there's one right now sitting on a website, a New York Woman website. And so it was, I was on Valentine's Day, I would have 14 interviews on a radio sitting in my living room, one right after the other, around the country. I had my little headset on, and there we went. And it was fun. It was fun. And Christmas also, like what to buy, how to help a man buy gifts for a woman, etc. And on the radio, they were thrilled with what I said about men, especially the men who were interviewing me.
Did they have callers calling in ever?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes they had callers calling in. And there's also a booklet about radio programs, and if you advertise, there's a number of people who will call you. So radio, the bookstores were great. It was a lot of fun. And then finding some lecture places. There are a few places in New York that welcome people sort of teaching subjects, and so I spoke there as well. But I did hire a marketing person,
okay.
And that was very helpful.
Yeah. Can I ask how the books have done? Have they done well?
They have done very well. They're still on Amazon. They're good.
Yeah.
They're good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Who are your readers, mostly?
I would say that it's women over 39, and we've had extraordinary success in our workshops with women over 45,
mm-hmm.
Because by then, you see no matter what you've done, you haven't fixed it. And so somehow the self-help, younger women still are trying things out, trial and error, thinking that they can figure it out for themselves. So I would say usually over 29, and 1 year in New York for the giving the workshops as well as the books, we had 5 women in our sort of group that shows up on a regular basis, 5 women over the age of 40 who got engaged, 50 who got engaged for the first time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, all in the same season. It was great. It was fun.
Now, I'm wondering if you've ever offered any workshops for younger, specifically targeted to younger women to help them not make the mistakes that that younger women make before they start thinking about all these things.
I pray for that, but the young women don't come on their own. The young women who have shown up are usually sent by aunts or mothers who know about us.
Mm.
But it does seem as if, at least in our experience, that women seem to need to make enough mistakes that they don't need any help.
Yeah.
They don't need any help, but when they've been hurt enough and it hasn't worked well enough, then they finally say, okay, I need some help.
Okay.
I wish it was different.
Yeah.
But not. It's not natural.
Yeah. I noticed that Arianna Huffington blurbed the female power within on the back flap of the book.
Yes.
She calls it a groundbreaking exploration of the nature of women's power, and then she goes on to say other things. So I'm curious, how did you get Arianna Huffington to blurb the book? Did you just send it to her?
No, I knew her sister very well.
Oh, okay.
Yes, and I knew her slightly, and she was generous enough to do that for us.
Okay,
yes.
That's great. I always wonder how people get these blurbs.
I think you have to know someone who knows someone.
So did working on these books change anything about the way that you and Maureen lead your workshops and retreats?
I don't think so. Our workshops were so tried and true, which was what motivated us to think we had something to share.
Yeah.
In book form. And I think it reached some women who might never have come to take our workshop, because a lot of women who read the books do end up taking the workshop. They want, it's a little different to read something as opposed to really get into it live
in person. Yeah.
Yeah. And so but every now, my nephew went moved to a new place, and his teacher, when he saw his last name, said, "Are you Marilyn Grayman? Related to Marilyn Grayman?" So this is wonderful. He obviously has been reading my books. So that was lovely, and it's so nice to know, that I don't know where people are being influenced, but that they are. Such as my nephew's teacher.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, it is. It's great.
Well, I just have one last question, and we've actually talked a little bit about how you and your business partner Maureen and Hillary wrote the books together as a collaboration. But I wonder if you can just turn that on its side a little bit and offer any advice for writers who are collaborating on either a book like this or another kind of book, just sort of how to set it up so that it goes smoothly.
Well, I think that you have to decide at the beginning of sitting down that anything that's been uncomfortable between you does not show up between you, and that that should be spoken out loud if necessary. That getting a lot of good rest and eating regularly, you know, that this kind of work, you could forget to eat, you could forget to drink, etc. That actually, you know, taking some timely breaks works. That when the frustrations come, to either change and move and do something else, either on the book or just change the subject, go for a walk, to not stay with the frustration after a while, and to have the optimism that it'll be cured, because my experience is it gets cured, and it doesn't seem like, how are we going to do that? You know, how are we going to fix that? What's the solution? I don't know. And so we work with a lot of confidence that it will work, even if we have no reality on it. And as I said, to move away for a period of time if there's a trouble spot, rather than try to, you know, push it to the ground.
Yeah.
All
right. Great. Well, I really appreciate your talking with me, Marilyn.
Well, thank you. And I appreciate your asking me.
That, once again, was a conversation with Marilyn Grayman. For more information about Marilyn Grayman's work and LifeWorks, you can check out LifeWorksGroup.com. That's the website, LifeWorksGroup, all one word, .com. The article that Marilyn mentioned during our interview can be found at the webzine New York City Woman, which is at nycitywoman.com. This week's Write the Book prompt was inspired by the conversation you heard today with Marilyn Grayman. The prompt is based on an exercise from How to Be Cherished, one of the books that she and Maureen Walsh wrote with Hillary Wells. If you write memoir or autobiographical poetry, the prompt for you this week is to create a care and feeding manual about yourself. And if you write fiction or biography, create one for one or more of your characters. In the book, a care and feeding manual is described as a fun and helpful way for your man to know you better. But in the case of this week's prompt, creating such a manual can be a way for you to get better acquainted with the subject of your work, whether it be you or a character or a historical figure. A few items to include in the care and feeding manual might be: the most important thing to know about me is fill in the blank. In a crisis, I fill in the blank. What scares me is, and when I'm feeling afraid, I do what? I'm going to include the full list of suggested prompts for writing a care and feeding manual on my website, along with the podcast of today's interview with Marilyn Grayman. And I'd like to thank Marilyn Grayman for permission to use this exercise from her book, How to Be Cherished. Good luck with this exercise, and please listen next week for another. If you're interested in sharing Write the Book with out-of-town friends, let them know. They can stream it live at theradiator.org every Monday from 2 to 3. Archived episodes of Write the Book are also available on iTunes and at writethebook.podbean.com as free podcasts. If you have comments about Write the Book or news about book-related events that you'd like included in the calendar, please send me an email, writethebook@gmail.com. You can also send me your ideas for writing prompts. I will happily credit you for any writing prompt that you might like to share. Cheryl Willoughby is going to be here at 3 o'clock with the World of Music. This has been Write the Book. I am Shayla Shapiro, and you're listening to The Radiator, which is community radio, 105.9 FM WOMMLP in Burlington, Vermont.